Good evening and welcome to another 2 hours of soul music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. Well, we were off for 2 weeks and I missed the program, and I know some of you also missed it. It just becomes part of Monday evening, right? Well, that's the way it is. We are creatures of habit, and I hope you had a great Pesach. We did, and a lot of wonderful davening also. Yanky Lemmer, Zevi Muller, and Yossi Molavani. So I certainly had my immersion in Chazanis. I hope that you may have had that also. I know many of you have traveled around the world, and there's all sorts of great Shabbos. Passover. Services with great chazanah. Well, we're back now to I was going to say back to the normal, but we're not, because we're during a period where there are all sorts of restrictions, and I will try my best to adhere to most of them. Try not to play happy music, joyous music. I'll keep the instrumental down, and actually, I'm going to be playing a lot of Chazanis, because that seems to be about the best that I can do. There'll be a little Yiddish here, a little perhaps a couple of historical recordings. And my friend Daniel Schwartz is going to share with me some live davenings. No, not Shabbos, but the live recordings of live davenings that are appropriate for me to play on the program. And during the forthcoming weeks, Daniel Schwartz will be co-hosting those programs with me to a great extent, and I thank him in advance for that. So that's what's going to be happening. We're, as I say, during this period of Sfira, I'll do my best to adhere to most of what you may be expecting. So let's get right to an appropriate recording. Yesterday was Yom HaShoah, a very, very stirring ceremony at KJ last night, and my friend Mayor Davis, and we must not forget, for sure. We must not forget. We'll start the first selection. I guess it's appropriate. I'm sure it is. It will be Zavel Kvartin with Rabbi Yishmael. To hear Rabbi Yishmael Atzmo.
Hey Rabbi Shmuel Atzmoy, ve yizkir es Hashem bishilu ediyem, ve yuhulu lamuroim, ve yuhulu lamuroim, Visual me so is levo is abadie. Vinom loi. Thank you.
Was Zaval Klartin with Tihir Rabbi Yishmael and Atzma, and that was, of course, from the Yom Kippur Martyrology. You are certainly familiar with Babi Yar. This was a ravine where tens of thousands of Jews were brutally murdered, butchered by the Nazis, and there's a very famous song that was produced by Sidor Belarsky, and the translation of the end of it is, but where can I search for the little bones to find them? Little bones, the dear ones of both my precious children. Help me, mothers, help me, my mournful song to weep. Help me, mothers, help me, so Babi Yar may sleep. This is Sidor Belarsky with Babi Yar.
Wollt ich aufgehangen das Wiegel auf a Balken ungehäudet, gehäudet mein Ingele, mein Janko. Is die Stube an Trunen mit a Flammefeuer. Wusche, wenn ich heute mein Ingele, mein Teil. Wollt ich aufgehangen das Wiegel auf a Bäume, ungehäudet, gehäudet mein Ingele, mein Schläume. Is mir nicht geblieben kein Fodem von kein Zier. Is mir nicht geblieben kein Bändel von kein Schiech. Oh. Wollt ich abgeschoren die Zeppe meine, die lange und aber sei das Wiegel aufgehangen. Weiß ich nicht, wo sind die Bändel die Beindelich, die Teiere von beide meine Kinder. Mm-hmm. helft mir, Mammes, helft mir euch, klogen meine Nigen. Helft mir, Mammes, helft mir, dem Babiar verwiegen.
The touching song of Bobby Yar, that was Sidor Belarski. Let's go back to June 6th, 1967. There was a magnificent speech, or an address, before the United Nations by Abba Eben. And just before I play a segment, not the whole piece, because that'll take about an hour and a half, but just the last 10 or 12 minutes of the speech. I would like to remind you, my dear listeners, that prior to this, from 48 to 67, was that 20 years? 48, 58, 67. It was 19, 20 years. The Arabs held the so-called West Bank, Judea and Samaria. Actually, it was much larger than what is the West Bank today. And they had half of Jerusalem in the old city. And the Jews were not allowed, no, they were not allowed to enter the old city. I have recounted to you many times that in 1963, when I was living on a kibbutz in Israel, when I went to Jerusalem and stood by the fence, the barbed wire fence, I was warned not to get too close because the Jordanian soldiers would shoot me. So all we could do was look at the walls of the old city in those days. Prior to 1967, the Arabs had everything that they're screaming for today. But I think the point, the historical point that you must remember, and when you get into a discussion or an argument with someone about the Arabs, 1963, when the Arabs held the West Bank, I don't like to call it the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and Gaza, and the Golan, and half of Jerusalem. Yasser Arafat formed the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization. Well, what were they thinking of liberating? What was the organization formed to do? What was its purpose? The Palestine Liberation Organization. They were going to liberate all of, quote, Palestine and destroy the Jewish people. That was their goal. They had, remember now, they had the West Bank, Judea, Samaria, they had Gaza, they had the Golan, they had half of the old city of, they had the old city of Jerusalem. The organization was formed with the clear goal to destroy all of Jewish Israel. And that is still their goal. They have not changed it. And this is why it will be difficult, if ever, to have peace with these terrorists. They are terrorists. Their goal is the destruction of the total state of Israel. And no matter how you define it. And just keep that in mind when somebody starts crying about the poor Arabs. They went to war in 1967, surrounded Israel with all their millions and all their armies, all their airplanes, tanks, and whatever, and they were very outspoken about it. Their goal was to destroy the Jewish state. Let's go to the United Nations, June 6, 1967, and pick up the last part of Abba Eben's speech.
Let me then say here that Israel welcomes the appeal for the ceasefire as formulated in this resolution. But I must point out that the implementation depends on an absolute and sincere acceptance and cooperation of the other parties, which in our view are responsible for the present situation. And in conveying this resolution to my colleagues, I must at this moment point out that these other governments have not used the opportunity yet to clarify their intentions. I've said, Mr. President, that the situation to be constructed after the ceasefire must depend upon certain principles. The first of these principles surely must be the acceptance of Israel's statehood and the total elimination of the fiction of her non-existence. It would seem to me that after 3,000 years, the time has arrived to accept Israel's nationhood as a fact. For here is the only state in the international community which has the same territory, speaks the same language, and upholds the same faith as it did 3,000 years ago.
I just have to repeat what he said, which is so, so clear. It would seem to me that after 3,000 years, the time has arrived to accept Israel's nationhood as a fact. Here is the only state in the international community which has the same territory, speaks the same language, and upholds the same faith as it did 3,000 years ago.
And if, as everybody knows to be the fact, the universal conscience was in the last week or two most violently shaken at the prospect of danger to Israel, it was not only because there seemed to be a danger to a state, but also, I think, because the state was Israel, with all that this ancient name evokes, teaches, symbolizes, and inspires. How grotesque would be an international community which found room for 127 sovereign units and which did not acknowledge the sovereignty of that people which had given nationhood its deepest significance and its most enduring grace. No wonder then that when danger threatened, we could hear a roar of indignation sweep across the world, that men in progressive movements, members of the scientific and humanistic cultures, joined together in sounding an alarm bell about an issue that vitally affected the human conscience. And no wonder, correspondingly, that a deep and universal sense of satisfaction and relief has accompanied the news of Israel's gallant and successful resistance. But the central point remains the need to secure an authentic intellectual recognition by our neighbors of Israel's deep roots in the Middle Eastern reality. There is an intellectual tragedy in the failure of Arab leaders to come to grips, however reluctantly, with the depth and authenticity of Israel's roots in the life, the history, the spiritual experience, and the culture of the Middle East. This then is the first axiom, a much more a conscious and uninhibited acceptance of Israel's statehood as an axiom requiring no demonstration, for there will never be a Middle East without an independent and sovereign state of Israel in its midst. The second principle must be that of a peaceful settlement of disputes. The resolution thus adopted falls within the concept of the Pacific settlement of disputes. I've already said that much could be done if the governments of the area would embark much more on direct contacts. They must find their way to each other. After all, when there is conflict between them, they come together face to face. Why should they not come together face to face to solve the conflict? And perhaps on some occasions it would not be a bad idea to have the solution before and therefore instead of the conflict. When the Council discusses what is to happen after the ceasefire, we hear many formulas back to 1956, back to 1948. I understand our neighbors would wish to turn the clock back to 1947. The fact is, however, that most clocks move forward and not backward. And this, I think, should be the case with the clock of Middle Eastern peace. Not backward to belligerency, but forward to peace. The point was well made this evening by the distinguished representative of Argentina, who said the ceasefire must be followed immediately by the most energetic efforts to find a just and true peace in the Middle East. In a similar sense, the distinguished representative of Canada warned us against merely reproducing the old conditions of conflict without attempting to settle the underlying issues of Arab-Israeli coexistence. After all, many things in recent days have been mixed up with each other. Few things are what they were. And in order to create harmonious combinations of relationships, it is inevitable that the states should come together in negotiation. Another factor in the harmony that we would like to see in the Middle East relates to external powers. From these, and especially from the greatest amongst them, the small states of the Middle East, and most of them are small, ask for a rigorous support, not for individual states, but for specific principles. Not to be for one state against other states, but to be for peace against war, for free commerce against belligerency, for the Pacific settlement of disputes against violent, irredentist threats. In other words, to exercise an even-handed support for the integrity and independence of states and for the rights of states under the Charter of the United Nations and other sources of international law. There are no two categories of states. The United Arab Republic, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, not one of these has a single ounce or milligram of statehood which does not adhere in equal measure to Israel itself. It is important that states outside our region apply a balanced attitude, that they do not exploit temporary tensions and divergences in the issues of global conflict, that they do not seek to win gains by inflaming fleeting passions, and that they strive to make a balanced distribution of their friendship amongst the states of the Middle East. Now, whether all the speeches of all the great powers this evening meet this criterion, everybody, of course, can judge for himself. I do not propose to answer in detail all the observations of the distinguished representative of the Soviet Union. I had the advantage of hearing the same things in identical language a few days ago from his colleague, the Soviet ambassador in Israel. I must convince that I was no more convinced this evening than I was the day before yesterday about the validity of this most vehement and one-sided denunciation. But surely world opinion, before whose tribunal this debate unrolls, can solve this question by posing certain problems to itself. Who was it that attempted to destroy a neighboring state in 1948? Israel or its neighbors? Who now closes an international waterway to the port of a neighboring state? Israel or the United Arab Republic? Does Israel refuse to negotiate a peace settlement with the Arab states, or they with it? Who disrupted the 1957 pattern of stability? Israel or Egypt? Did troops of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Lebanon, Kuwait, Algeria surround Israel in this menacing confrontation? Or has any distinguished representative seen some vast Israeli colossus surrounding the area between Morocco and Kuwait? I raise these points of elementary logic. Of course, a great power can take refuge in its power from the exigencies of logic. All of us in our youth presumably recounted La Fontaine's fable, "La raison du plus fort est toujours la meilleure."
Right makes.
But here,
right,
after right. All, there's nobody who is more or less strong than others. We sit here around the table on the concept of sovereign equality. And I think we have an equal duty for bringing substantive proof for any denunciation that we make each of the other. Conclusion, Mr. President, these are, of course, still grave times. And yet, they may perhaps have fortunate issue. This could be the case if those who, for some reason, decided so violently to disrupt the status quo 3 weeks ago would ask themselves what the results and benefits have been as he looks around him at the arena of battle, at the wreckage of planes and tanks, at the collapse of intoxicated hopes. Might not an Egyptian ruler ponder whether anything was achieved by that disruption? What has it brought but strife, conflict with other powerful interests, and the stern criticism of progressive men throughout the world? I think that Israel has proved her steadfastness and vigor in recent days. She is now willing to demonstrate her instinct for peace. Let us build a new system of relationships from the wreckage of the old. Let us discern across the darkness the vision of a better and a brighter dawn.
That was Abba Ibn. That was his speech before the United Nations in 1967. Of course, the language has changed, and most people, if they would, I would say, if the average person were asked who started the war, they would say Israel, because Israel captured the territory, and the areas of Judea and Samaria or the West Bank, these are in fact disputed territories, but that's not the way they are described. This is it's amazing how the language has been skewed to make Israel as the party that started all these wars, and they are being penalized because they have been victorious. Anyway, let's get back to music, music of a sort, actually. I was trying to figure out what could I play. I do have a few live davenings myself, but we'll be hearing them during the next few weeks or so. But I'm going to play a medley. I hope that you don't think that this is an easy way out for me. But there are many, many wonderful versions of Ani Ma'amin, which I think is very appropriate following Yom HaShoah. So we will start with Tzvi Aharoni and Ani Ma'amin.
Tremor, anima mia,
να μην ανοίγει. Θεμονό, ελεγώ, δεν είχα.
As you can tell, that was at a live performance. That was Tzvi Aharoni. We'll next hear cantor Isaac Goodfriend with Ani Mamin.
Oh,
That was Isaac, a good friend, and the album Songs of Martyrdom. This will next be Shmuel Vagoda with Ani Maamin.
Samusia.
Shmuel Vagoda, and as I was listening to him singing, I had to make a mental note that I have really not played Shmuel Vagoda much at all, and he certainly was one of the greats. Let's hear Yossi Malavani and Ani Ma'amin. Cantor Yossi, or Joseph Malavani, with Ani Ma'amin. And we're playing a lot of great cantors, aren't we? I hope you're enjoying this as I am. Let's hear Moshe Stern. Moshe Stern with Ani Ma'amin.
Ani Ma'amin.
That was Moshe Stern. Of course, that was before a live audience. I've been playing medleys, if you will, of certain selections which I feel are appropriate following Yom HaShoah. And, you know, there's so much from Yom Kippur, and it could go on and on. But I'm starting another medley of Av HaRachamim, Hu Yirachem Am Amusim. And we'll start with, I hope this comes through, Leib Glantz. This is Leib Glantz with Av HaRachamim.
Av HaRachamim Hu Yirachem Hu Yirachem Hu Yirachem Hu Yirachem Physical berries, berries, they son you, my son you.
schwitze nur mit der Schwalze raus. Mir der Schwalze.
Aleb Glantz with Vahu Rachum. Let's hear next. Who do I have lined up here? Let's see. Shmuel Katz. Shalom Katz. I got my Katzes mixed up. Shalom Katz.
Amma musim, amma musim u yerachem, amma musim. Mamma musim,
is the coil very sonny. They is the coil very sonny. They are till, they are till of Chaussein, they are till of Chaussein. Be me.